Representative Duncan will be with us shortly. He's testifying in another committee. And the others. Basically, what I'd like to do today, the commissioner just asked to go over a few things. Since they have a proposed CS, maybe some of the changes, and this is a little more of an informal working group meeting type thing of getting some of the concepts across and talk about. And there's a couple of handouts here that prepared. There's one, maybe I could just point them out to the committee. There's this one here. See this job here?
Mm-hmm.
I asked the commissioner to and Milt to see if they would run municipal debt and separate out how much of that municipal debt is school debt so that we could, I didn't know if the numbers are useful, but I thought it'd be something useful to look at. And they've gone a little bit farther than that and actually pointed out what percentage of the school debt in each community is actually paid for by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So can you, Milt, from this chart, can you figure out what percentage of the GO debt, total debt of the community is GO debt? You got a, or a school debt, rather?
School debt? Well, yes, sir. The bottom of the second page there indicates for the total of all municipalities, 93% of the school debt is reimbursed by the state.
Okay. How about...
Can I ask a quick question on this? I don't understand what that means.
Okay.
I don't understand what that means.
It means 93% of principal and interest payments on all school debt is paid by the state.
Well, how can that be? Because it seems like it's been 80%, it's been 50%, it's been 90%. Apparently there must have been some point when it was 100% as well, and I just don't remember that. That must be the case. When was that?
I can provide you with that information. I don't have it handy.
Okay.
There's a brief window of time and a lot of...
When the state agreed to just assume all debt and start
right,
over.
Right, and a whole lot of debt was issued under that
umbrella.
Okay, just so I can get an example here, let's pick on my town of Ketchikan then. Ketchikan has a total debt of 55.6 million.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that includes revenue debt, and probably for purposes here, we only want to look at GO debt.
Okay, so that's 30 or 21 million then?
31.9, counting both the city and borough. Borough only would be 21.09 million, of which 16.4 million would be school debt. In other words, the lion's share of it is school debt. The column labeled net GO debt is the non-school debt plus the municipality's share of the school debt, essentially.
So how could you figure out how much of the municipal's total debt as a percentage of school debt? You'd have to divide that.
Well, what you would, if I can butt in, what you do in the Gateway Borough would be take 92% of 16,445, which, or perhaps better to take 8% of that number, which would be the borough's obligation if the percentage contribution is fully funded.
Okay, but if go back, you go to column one, you take the 21 million plus the 10 million. Is that the?
No, that's you got city and borough there.
You got city and borough.
So total area. That'd be $31 million of total debt, of which 16 million is school debt.
Correct.
Right.
So about 50%, 55% of their outstanding debt has gone into schools.
Right. And of the 16, they're 445, they're reimbursed 92%. So the effective indebtedness is the presumably the bottom line they'll have to pay out relates to the 40. In other words, they would get reimbursed so much money that the total net debt is the combination of what their obligation is, which would be 8% of the 16,445 plus the 32 million.
Okay. Well, just another example, so I can see how it's working in Anchorage, and in line one has 358 million of outstanding GO debt,
mm-hmm.
of which 139 million is school debt.
Right.
Of which that 139, they're only responsible for 6% of it.
Assuming that the reimbursement is fully funded.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the question.
Okay. There was just, the reason I wanted to bring it up is just there has been suggested to me that there is another way of looking at the municipal debt issue, which is 221, which is to take the municipality's debt, in this case Anchorage at $358 million plus, and back out of that number the state's obligation for school debt. So
right.
You basically subtract out 139 or 94% of 139 million and use that number to see whether where they are on their lid. And I think if you did that, you could drop the municipal lid down to 5%.
Perhaps you could, but I would strongly recommend retaining a higher percentage as the lid and counting the total amount of the issue against the municipal responsibility. And there are two reasons for that. One of them is that the municipality has the choice when it incurs that obligation. And secondly, if we have a really precipitous fall in revenues and a choice has to be made between funding operating programs and debt service, because the municipality is in fact obligated for debt service, the logical thing to do would be to make the cut so that actual school instruction is not diminished. And so you'd make a cut between operating costs and debt service.
Could I ask you to just repeat that? Actual school construction wasn't diminished, is that what you said?
No. Instruction,
oh,
not
instruction.
Construction. Yeah.
Well, the argument being that the municipalities are the primary issuer of the debt, right? And the state's agreed to pay back the 80%, but if the state, or 90% or whatever it is, but the state doesn't fund it, say we have a massive drop in revenue and we make a choice, we're going to fund the operating side, but we're only going to fund 50% of the capital, the debt side,
mm-hmm.
then the municipality who issued the debt, the school debt, is going to have to pick up the rest of it.
Well, but if I couldn't,
and that's the basis on which the bonds are sold.
Yeah.
But what I don't see how that would make any difference on whether instruction got cut or not.
You got a pocket of $100, okay? And all of a sudden you discover you've got a hole in that pocket and all you've got left in the pocket is 67 cents. And what are you going to do with the 67 cents? Are you going to put it all toward debt repayment for construction? Are you going to put it all toward paying teacher salaries? Or are you going to try to make a cut somewhere in that 67 cents to make a reasonable allocation of what you have left? And what we're saying is that because the municipalities have the right to elect when they go out for the issuance of debt and the purpose for which the debt is issued, they can make that election. That it makes sense to leave school debt as part of their municipal obligation and not take it out to the extent there is reimbursement, because if you do have this shortfall and you've only got 67 cents in your pocket, you're going to make the election to retain teachers in the classroom from the state's end before you're going to make an election to put more money toward debt service.
Yeah, it just seems like the bottom of the $99.33 is going to be paid by the city. I mean, it's still going to, I mean, they're not going to default on their bonds and they're still going to have teachers. So it's just, so the
state. That's right. It's just a question of how you disclose this kind of thing to bondholders, and the bondholders have been informed that it is state-supported debt, and the bond, the official statement sets forth that the state has either up to 50, up to 90, up to 100, or up to 80, what, depending on when the bonds were issued, that type of reimbursement, but it's only up to. And if we say there's an absolute guarantee that it will be that and nothing less, we will, in terms of the future, perhaps mislead people who rely on a lower debt burden in a municipality than they really should.
Do you think that's the way it is now? Do you think the way the law reads now that we're guaranteed?
No.
I don't think so either.
Right. And I don't think that we ought to do anything that would change that idea with respect to who's responsible for debt. I mean, the bonds have already been sold, they're marketable, and that's why I say I'd rather see a higher cap for municipal debt than to start messing around with the reimbursement formulas.
Do you, I guess this is a little following sub, do you feel all the communities that have issued this school debt are capable of paying 100% of it back? I don't know if that's a fair question or not, but
I
just wonder if some of these communities have gone out with the concept that, you know, they're betting that the state's going to pick up their share.
I don't think that's really a fair question, because I think the state will make every effort, and probably at sacrifice of other types of certainly new construction, new capital projects, in order to ensure that those communities are not damaged by an allocation or failure to make an allocation for their debt service.
Okay. This is kind of Representative Ewling's also here for the record, and Representative Frank. Just kind of a free-flowing discussion here that I just wanted to go through. I had to ask for this printout to be made, and just wanted to point out to the committee what information is on it and why some of the concepts are there.
Could we backtrack on a couple of points?
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned that may have been missed the last time we were talking.
But you want to go back to 519 then?
Yeah, could we go back to 519? 519 is the bill which sort of consolidates under one umbrella the analysis of non-GO debt acquisition.
Now, there is a proposed CS that you've prepared that's in all our folders.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, so you would.
Do we have
DOR
it?
It says 521 with DOR up the upper right-hand corner.
That we were going 519.
519 is what she was on.
Oh, okay.
Can we go to 519 first?
Okay, we'll do that.
When we were talking last time, there was concern expressed about this sort of consolidation of the management of the debt. And one of the points that I think is absolutely essential to be kept in mind, and that is that this is a bill that relates to lease purchase financing. And in a lease purchase financing, you have to have a landlord and a tenant. Otherwise, you don't have the lease. If you didn't have the landlord and the state were funding the entire debt, it would be GO debt. It would not be revenue debt, and it would not be lease purchase debt of any kind. So in order to establish this structure of financing, you need to establish an entity which will be the landlord. And in this case, this bill establishes ASHA, doing business as the Alaska State Building Authority, as the landlord. In a landlord-tenant situation, then you also have the tenant, and the tenant would be whatever state agency or branch of government had entered into a lease agreement with the landlord in order to structure the financing. It doesn't make sense to have many, many landlords and have a proliferation of landlords who have to set up their independent structures in order to administer any one particular building or bond issue. It makes sense to consolidate all of those landlord efforts under one roof, in the same way that you'll find real estate companies managing a number of different properties. Because we seek to consolidate it in the one agency doesn't necessarily mean that ASHA has any greater authority with respect to the operating programs of the entity with which it has entered into a lease agreement. The only thing it needs to do is to be assured that the operating entity of whatever branch of government is involved simply pays the rent. There is a further step, and that is oversight over ASHA as a debt issuing agency, and that oversight is accomplished by the State Bond Committee, which reviews the acquisition of debt to make sure that over time the state has enough revenue to meet that debt service and to ensure that the best terms and conditions possible are obtained when the issue goes to market. The process, there was concern expressed that the State Bond Committee would become some sort of super agency who could make qualitative decisions for the three branches of government. The existing statute, which is in Title 37, and the amendments that we're proposing do not vest authority in the State Bond Committee to make any qualitative judgments with respect to any specific project. The only authority which the Bond Committee has and seeks to have is that ability to make a judgment as to whether or not a particular financing has the terms and conditions that are the best in the best interest of the state, and in fact that the state has the capacity to pay this debt over time without major sacrifice of other programs. The process that probably would be adopted by any branch of government, let alone any agency within any branch of government, is a fairly lengthy one, which would be first an analysis of need, then preliminary design, funding, an analysis of sort of the outside cost. At that point, the logical thing would be to have the agency consult with the bond committee to ensure that by the time all of the plans are ready to go and the and a contract could be let, that the state would have capacity to meet that debt. As the project progressed, more certainty would arise with respect to when a state agency could occupy the facility to be constructed. With the legislature meeting every year, the ability to review the budget, to review the progress of the project, to review all aspects of the development of this particular project is there. And it, that type of review can be accomplished in probably over two or three sessions of the legislature before the first shovel of dirt would be turned. The structure of the language of the statute, Title 37, and these proposed amendments, because they are limited to giving the State Bond Committee authority only to deal with proposed issues coming out of ASHA, the choice, you know, all it does is deal with whether or not it's a satisfactory issuance. It doesn't have anything to do with the substance of the project itself, so it wouldn't matter whether it was a toll bridge or an office building or a court building or a prison facility or whatever it was that was chosen to be financed, legislative hall. Those decisions would all have been made by others. And the only decisions that would be made by the State Bond Committee would be whether or not there was capacity and whether or not the proposed issuance was appropriate under the circumstances.
Representative Gunn?
I'd yield that.
Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, what form of legislative, or what form would the legislative oversight that you referred to take? You know, let's say that the Department of Transportation wanted to build a building for some purpose, or, you know, and members of the legislature decided that wasn't the right thing to do. What form of oversight or expression of dissatisfaction does the bill envision, or do you envision?
Well, if the Department of Transportation Public Facilities was going to build its own building, for instance, I would assume that legislative oversight would arise, first of all, because they would request funds for design. You could say, no, you can't have any funds for design.
I think DOT could come up with their own.
Yeah, but a lot of times they cannot.
The DOT is probably a bad example, but
yeah, but assume for the sake of argument that it was, say, the Department of Corrections. They would request funds to do two things. One, an analysis of need, site location and need, and secondly, design. And you could say, no, you can't have the money. They do not have the money to then request either of Department of Transportation Public Facilities or an outside consulting firm for the information necessary. if you assume for the sake of argument that you've gotten over that hurdle and you have gone to gone through that preliminary process and the need has been demonstrated and indeed the location has been demonstrated, then if they were going to go ahead, you would need to know at what point, what year, what fiscal year, the additional rents would have to be incorporated in the budget. Okay? And if the legislature were going to refuse to incorporate those funds in the budget to cover the lease rental costs, it doesn't make a lick of sense to go forward with a project you know you can't pay for.
Well, if I could continue, I can see that what you're saying might make some practical sense from the standpoint that, you know, if Division of Corrections wanted a new building, they would be smart to get a little informal approval from the House Finance Chairman or the Senate Finance Chairman or something like that. But it seems kind of an informal mechanism you're talking about, because bonds would be issued probably in some cases 2 or 3 years before the building would be occupied. At least they would start to be issued, I'm assuming, or bond anticipation notes or whatever you call those things. And I'm concerned about, you know, you have a building built, you could have a building built, and then the legislature hasn't made either any affirmative action or denied any budget request, with the exception of maybe a design plan or, you know, request, or maybe not. And I just remain skeptical about the formality of legislative oversight as for the lack thereof.
Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple things. Presently, we've got the sections of the bill with the Supreme Court, you know, lease financing, and also the legislative section. And then also, I guess I'll come back to that, but I guess my thinking is, from an agency standpoint, what would your feeling be if the State Bond Committee had the complete oversight? I mean, I realize they have the oversight now to a certain extent, but what, maybe you could kind of explain to me the rationale for having the ASHA be the intermediator there, when it would just be that it could be established with just the State Bond Committee doing the work and doing the oversight. Why establish like a third a go-between? And maybe you could explain why do we need to create more government when we can condense it, maybe just have the State Bond Committee do that oversight?
Mr. Chairman. Two reasons. First of all, we don't want to create more government, which mm-hmm. basically your proposal would do. And secondly, as I pointed out at the beginning, there's the land. You need to have a landlord-tenant relationship. And the reason for establishing ASHA as the point of contact is that ASHA would be the landlord.
Mm-hmm.
The State Bond Committee is presently limited in requests through this legislation to be limited mm-hmm. merely to the financial aspects of the bond issue. It does not want to get into the position of being a substantive state agency managing real estate.
Mm-hmm.
The proper role of the State Bond Committee is merely to manage debt, and to act as a landlord would expand dramatically the scope of its operations. Would create a bureaucracy we don't need to create because we already have one. And I think that the State Bond Committee would not serve any useful purpose.
Being involved in that, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Being involved in that process at the detail level.
Right.
Okay, now, Mr. Chairman, who's doing all the kind of landlord tenant relationship things right now? It's just spread out in other departments, or what how is that being?
Well, Mr. Chairman, to the extent that there is any lease purchase mm-hmm. financing in place mm-hmm. at this time, there are about two or three different landlords. One is ASHA.
Mm-hmm.
One is the City of Seward. And the City of Anchorage is proposing itself to be a landlord for the court building. It's our position it makes absolutely no sense to proliferate landlords all over everywhere when it's the state's unrestricted revenue that goes to retire the debt.
And then, Mr. Chairman, would you have an objection if the section on page 3, starting at line 17, was taken out, which, let's see if that's right, which the two sections that I guess I have some concern about, number one is the oversight from a balance of power, separation of powers question on the legislature and the judicial branch. And I was wondering if there was any, and I know we don't have the Attorney General here, Mr. Chairman, or anything, but as we get into the working sides of this bill, I do have some concerns about, you know, how that's all going to be worked out, and if, in fact, we can designate the State Bond Committee or whoever, the ASHA or whoever, to do all these kind of things, when we should really leave the judicial and the legislative branch separate. And I don't know, is there an opinion on that, or can we get an opinion from the Attorney General that's going to state that there is going to be a potential problem with that, a constitutional problem or whatever?
Mr. Chairman, the Attorney General did the drafting for us and suggested no constitutional problems whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We would object very strenuously to striking out the requirement that the Supreme Court work through ASHA. And the reason for that is, again, that if you don't have the control through ASHA of the acquisition of debt, the Supreme Court at this particular time can rush off and contract with anybody as its landlord and simply come into the legislature and present the legislature with basically a fait accompli. We've got all these court buildings all over the place, and all we have to say is, gee whiz, thanks for the debt. It destroys the ability, or certainly vastly diminishes the ability, of the state to understand precisely what is happening with its unrestricted revenue, because that is the source of payment. It really doesn't matter whether it's the executive, the judicial, or the legislative branch of government for these particular purposes. The source of repayment is the unrestricted revenue of the state. And that's what the financial community certainly looked at.
Go ahead.
I was just going to add to that, but I was kind of interested if we could go historically, because we did have Mr. Snowden that came before the court system who did testify, and it seems to me in the court system, the court building in Anchorage, didn't they come before the legislature and get the prior approval of the legislature before they engaged in that?
That was a GO bond.
That was a GO bond.
Serves, and that, of course, not only had legislative approval in terms of the...
It was not a GO bond. A GO bond has to be approved by the voters.
That's right, but I think it was.
I don't think it was
after
a GO bond.
After they had a GO bond, they wouldn't have to come back to the legislature for disposition of funds.
I think the court building they're in now,
right,
versus the one they're proposing.
Well, the one that they were proposing, it seems to me he came before the legislature and got a resolution or something that I voted on back in 1982 or 83.
Yes, that's correct, but that one hasn't been built.
No, it
and
hasn't.
That's the one that they were shopping around for a landlord, and the city of Anchorage came forward and said, we'll be your landlord.
But the one that is built there in now was a GO bond.
That's my recollection, is that it was GO.
Okay, Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just outlined a scenario in which the judicial branch could lay before the legislature, in as you described it, in a fait accompli. And how would that be different than the bond committee doing the same thing? I mean, under the bill.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that I think that we have to get back to, and I don't want to sound as if I'm, you know, just trying to beat a dead horse, but let us not forget that there's a very logical reason for having ASHA as an intermediary, because that's the source of where the planning focuses in terms of the development of any project. Once the project is fully developed and ready for financing is when the State Bond Committee would have any authority to deal with it specifically, and at that point it would only be with regard to the issuance of the bonds. There would be no substantive determination made, but because it would be centralized, there wouldn't be the likelihood of surprises coming out of the woodwork on lease revenue financing. The court system, as I understand it, came to the legislature out of a matter of comedy, not because they were absolutely required to do it, in order to go for lease financing. And we think that by centralizing that function in one agency, everybody can keep a better handle on it.
Representative Cotton.
The discussion has been on whether lease financing becomes part of the state's debt obligation according to the bond people, whoever they are. And the conclusion has been that Yes, the lease financing arrangements are part of our overall obligation. And I mean, that means an obligation for the state to spend money, right?
That's right.
It's an obligation. It's not a legal obligation except in the case of GO debt, but it's enough of an obligation that they expect the state to follow through on it, and it comes from the general fund, and therefore they're adding it in with GO debt.
Well, see, what happens, I think the way the current system is right now, at least as the commissioner just mentioned, the governor doesn't believe that he has to ask the legislature legally for that for permission to enter into lease financing. Is that correct?
As far as the executive branch of government is correct. That's correct.
Even though he's probably obligating the legislature to appropriate funds later. So that's where I get to wondering about. I think that this current governor said that even though he may not technically be required to do so, he will ask the legislature for specific approval. And I don't know whether it's a constitutional question of separation of powers or not, but it appears to me that since we probably really are obligated, that the legislature should play a role in this, and so far as approval of what is de facto debt.
Well,
and I don't believe that yeah. that this bill really addresses that. It doesn't really change anything, right, as far as that's concerned. I'm not really sure whether you're.
Is there a difference
just clarifying
here? Is there a difference between just a pure lease, going out and leasing office space, and lease purchase? What are we talking about here?
We're talking here about lease purchase.
So where the state is going to buy.
That's right.
I have a hard time difference between a lease purchase
and a
buy. And we end up owning the structure at the end of
the financing period.
End of the financing period, right. We own it. So it's almost a revenue bond situation. Ash is saying, I got this stream of revenue over here that's going to pay off this bond. And therefore I can sell bonds, right? But the stream of revenue is from the state.
That's correct. That's exactly what it is. It's a lease revenue financing.
I guess maybe just give me a little simple example of how maybe this would change. The state troopers, public safety, has put a request in the governor's capital budget for $2 million to build a new house for themselves in Ketchikan. Right? They've just kind of... And apparently that goes... I don't know how the governor put this capital budget together, but apparently that funnels through some source over there, maybe at OMB or something, who's kind of looking it over the whole pot and saying, we think we should do this. What happens if the legislature says, no, we're not going to fund that, or we run out of money, we don't do it? And then they turn around and say, well, let's go lease finance it. Right? If they want a capital to pay cash for it, they got to come and ask us, and we can say yes or no. But if I kind of see where this is going, they could come and just go down and make a lease purchase agreement with somebody and say, you build it, we'll pay you for it over 20 years, and when we pay you for it, we own it, and sign a lease purchase agreement. And you're saying that can be done without ever coming back to the legislature, even though that way would probably cost us more.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let's talk about a couple of different things here. Okay, first of all, according to the analysis in the lease purchase task force report, direct funding is one of the more expensive ways to go. Okay, lease purchase financing is probably cheaper than a straight lease. The state, because of the, financing, okay?
Uh-huh.
The state presently has a policy of not entering into leases for more than 5 years. Okay. So let's look at what the need for the project is. What is the project supposed to be? Should it logically be just a straight rental from a landlord, or is it such a facility that it's in the long-term interests of the state to own it rather than, you know, have to give it up in 2, 3, 5 years? Or if it wanted to stay in the facility longer, throw itself on the private mortgage market or lease market at escalating prices for that space.
Or start de-escalating in the case of Ketchikan. I keep reminding you that we have a depression. We're in de-inflation. We're leading the state in this area.
Right.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, a point I'd like to make is that that's essentially the situation you've got right now. And what's proposed in this bill would at least interject the State Bond Committee in here to make sure that people consider what our overall total bill for debt service is currently, and that the debt is sold on the best terms possible. As you recognize, it doesn't give the legislative body control over the issuance. But the bill does, I would point out, require that anybody entering into a lease purchase financing to notify the legislature. And it you have, in the governor's transmittal letter, his commitment to seeking legislative approval without requiring it by statute, so that we don't have any separation of powers questions, which the main thing there is people get real nervous if there is a constitutional question when it comes to financing, because bond counsel have to have everything just perfect. So
could you repeat that?
That's important.
But I think also you need to realize that there is a statute on the books that says that for anything over a certain price, the legislature will approve it. And the Attorney General has rendered a decision saying that that's an intrusion into the executive prerogative. So if we know that there's an AG's opinion that has addressed that point,
I guess
Milt's remarks make more sense.
Yeah, the point I'm trying to get at is that if you want to pay cash for it, you got to come and ask the legislature.
Right.
If you want to pay for it in one, you know, write a check for the whole amount. But you're saying if you want to write 20 checks for it over 20 years and end up owning the capital asset of the state, you don't have to come and ask the legislature for it.
You do. Every year for 20 years you have to come and ask the legislature for money. Every year.
Okay. Now, you're saying these lease purchases, the bond market's going to sell it, buy it, and we have the subject to appropriation each year, and if we don't appropriate it and we don't fund it, that they're not going to try to hold the state liable?
They just take the building. I don't know what you're going to do with the state services that are being furnished out of that building. You know, there are certain...
But basically, I mean, we're...
I mean, we're supposed to be dealing with rational people in a rational system who are not going to do grossly imprudent things.
Yeah, these are just some very
sure
basic concepts. Sometimes they're the hardest ones to talk about. Representative Ewing.
Yeah, along those same lines, you're talking about, Mr. Chairman, you're talking about a lease purchase situation, aren't you?
Yeah.
In other words, a lease purchase situation. Who and the bondholders are holding the paper?
Right.
Okay.
Well, Ash is holding the paper.
Well, Ash
no,
is
holding. No. Ash is not holding.
Ash
the paper.
Ash is acting as an
intermediary.
Ash
is holding the lease. Ash is collecting the rents and paying the bond holders.
So Ash would be just the intermediator in between it. However, the bondholders would be the ones who would lose.
Right.
So, I guess I have the same kind of concerns that Representative Cotton did when I go to the first page. We talk about a lease. Financing agreement must provide that lease payments are subject to annual appropriations. Okay, so they're subject to annual appropriations, yet we're over here, we're giving ASHA the authority to go either over and intermediate this and set up the bonds and the bonds go into effect and everything, but then we come back in another couple of years and say, oh, it's subject to appropriations, we've changed our mind. That means that, in essence, that bondholders default. Or we could force them to default.
No, we default. The bondholders
don't default.
And at that point, obviously, we're persona non grata in the financial markets. So we don't do that again because nobody would trust us again. But basically, there really is essentially very little.
You can do that without coming to the legislature. I guess that's the biggest issue we're talking about here is that you can commit the state to 20 years of payments for a building, even though if you put this subject to annual appropriation, which we all say, well, it's there, but then on the other hand, we turn around rapidly and say, well, you can never not do it because it causes all these great ills and whatever. And I guess that's what gives me the biggest issue is that, you know, I would like to see, and maybe it's a constitutional issue, and we'll have to get our lawyers out to give us some argument, but that on some, to me, there's a level of commitment here. You know, there's a difference between a lease for 5 years for 100 square thousand or 10,000 square feet downtown here, or a lease purchase for $100 million worth of building. There's
Mr. Chairman,
you know,
look,
and
yeah, I think we're getting off the beaten track. This legislation is remedial, okay? It's to cure a problem which presently exists. At this particular time, the court system, the legislature, and the executive can go out and commit themselves to leases which may or may not be for 20 years, okay?
Leases, so.
Leases, plain leases.
Should be purchased, too.
Well, yes. But these, you know, are leases of buildings owned by private people, okay? Mm-hmm. There is no constraint, there's no review, there is no central point at which the judgments as to the obligations of the state exist. At the present time, if we do not want to lease for 20 years, we can go out, any one of the branches of government can go out and enter into a lease purchase agreement which commits the state to 10, 15, 20 years of payment for a facility. Okay, there is no control over that situation at this time. And in point of fact, we have some difficulties even managing to find out for sure just what the commitments of the state are. Witness some real difficulty we had with regard to the Seward project, which was basically a total escape from any kind of management, from the debt angle or any other way, until all of a sudden it became very apparent that we were into problems. But in that particular case, the Department of Corrections unwittingly and the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities unwittingly could have circumvented all kinds of review by the state in connection with its agreement with the city of Seward for the construction of a prison facility, and only at some future time would the legislature have found out about it, and only at some future time would we have discovered we were locked into this situation. So this is remedial of trying to take care of a bad situation before it gets worse.
Okay. Representative Cotton?
No, I was just going to discuss, you mentioned an AG's opinion on that lease financing. I guess there is one in existence.
Right.
We'd like to get that. I'm just going to suggest to John that we request a legislative legal that there may be one of those existing, too, that our legislative affairs agency has done, just for our own information, just a little more light on that issue.
Okay. Representative Ewing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. The more I think about this, the more I think we've got the judicial branch doing this, we've got the legislative branch doing this, we've got the, you know, executive branch doing three different things. have we looked into the constitutional aspects of letting the legislature approve every lease purchase? In other words,
that's
every
precisely
year.
What we were talking about, and that, yes, and indeed.
Well, I give it to, you know, even though maybe Asher may have to administer it, if I might interrupt here, Asher could administer it, but if every session we had a list of ones that had to be approved and we just approved them, or somehow they were brought to the legislature, we're not going to have that much money to spend in the future years anyway. It could all be accomplished if it was all timed in that 120-day period or 130-day period, and then it would just have to be done during that period. And then it would at least come before the legislative body, because we're the ones that have to eventually appropriate the money for the darn thing in the future. Of course, you can't bind future legislatures, but, I mean, at least it would have the process of going through one group. I mean, the court system already had to come over and bring their facility to us already.
Mr. Chairman, may I respond?
Sure.
The court system did it as a matter of courtesy. It had absolutely no requirement to do so, and could have committed the state and its unrestricted revenues to the payment of that building. The Attorney General has ruled that in lease purchase financing for the executive branch, it can't build court buildings. Likewise, the separation of powers problem for the executive or the court system to tell the legislature they can't do something is likewise a problem of separation of powers. The problem that we're dealing with specifically in this legislation is, one, gathering all of the information in one spot, and only at the time the financing would be put in place would a difficulty arise with respect to whether or not the state could afford it. Assume for the sake of argument that the decision was made that the state could not afford it between the last day of the legislature in 1 year and the commencement of the legislature in the next year, and the issue didn't go forward. obviously, if it were a legislative building, the legislature would take whatever action was necessary either to further the project by perhaps, instead of having a capital budget, you know, defease some bonds so as to create greater bond capacity in the state. Or if it were the judicial, maybe they would go ahead and defease bonds so you could create additional bond capacity. The problem is whether or not you want a system which is going to run you so high into debt that you will no longer have access to the financial markets because you will be shown to be fools. And I don't think the state of Alaska wants to be shown to be fools.
Yeah. I don't think we ever
want
to do that.
Yeah.
No. And an uncontrolled situation which exists at this particular time is one that we're attempting to bring under control so that we're not foolish.
Yeah. It seems to me that a lot of this here, the governor controls all of that anyway. And, you know, and
I wish that were true.
Well, I hope he has control of what his agencies are doing in terms of going out and entering into leases and lease purchases. I mean, at least for the executive branch, he can say you can't do that, right? I mean, he has that much control.
That's correct.
So,
but what happens when the legislature says there will be a prison facility in Seward, and the city of Seward will be the landlord? That's a legislative determination, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with the executive control. I happen to think it is.
Yeah. But, you know, we may...
Who controls the issue?
I guess my argument or my concern gets down, the executive may have the authority to enter into leases, but when you transfer that into lease purchases, then I think you're getting into the acquisition of capital assets of the state. And to me, that's in the purview of the legislature. And, you know, what we may have to do is just take it on up to the Supreme Court one of these days. The legislature's going to get upset enough and going to take it in and let's see what the Constitution really says, because you can have an AG's opinion on one side and we have one on the other side. And
this is a classic example where the guy writing the opinion works for the guy that wants to do the deal.
But so. I agree with you, that's a little beyond the scope of this bill, but this bill raises that issue, comes jumping right up and gets there. So, but Representative Frank, you had a question.
Well, I was just going to point out that my memory serves me, if my memory does serve me, it was the statute in question that the Attorney General opinion concerns is a 12,000, any appropriation for leases above $12,000, and I don't know if that's annual or what, but it's pretty small, in other words, and I think that there is a big distinction between a $12,000 lease for a, you know, office down on Franklin Street and a $100 million building down in Anchorage or something like that.
Well, the AG's opinion was on that particular
statute. I believe it was. Now, I haven't read it, but I believe that it spoke to... There is an actual... I have read the statute that does say $12,000, and I think it's annual. So it's a relatively small dollar amount. But I did want to follow that up with another question, if I could.
Go ahead.
Sure. Commissioner, why have we... why did we get into lease revenue bonds with ASHA and that sort of thing? As versus just geo-bonding it. Why don't we just go out and geo-bond it?
I'll answer that. Go ahead.
two reasons. One is that it doesn't make sense for the state to deprive itself of the mechanism for a well-managed capital acquisition program, a portion of which could be done through lease revenue. Secondly, GO bonds have to withstand the test of public opinion, which may or may not be swayed at any one particular time with respect to a particular project. And thirdly, the GO obligation is a much heavier obligation than that incurred by the state with respect to lease purchase financing. And if you finance those facilities which are appropriate, which have a revenue stream, through a lease revenue financing, you free up capacity for the acquisition of those facilities which do not have a revenue stream but are part of the needed infrastructure capital plan to the state.
If I could follow that up.
If I could ask your next question for you, but go ahead.
Well, I would make the assertion, you know, as you indicated a few minutes ago, this ultimate source is of this bond repayment is the state's unrestricted revenues. I don't see where those revenues are any, you know, they are unrestricted revenues. They are general revenues. They are from the general fund, from general operations of state government, as distinct from a toll road or some other revenue bond. And then, so I don't see the distinction with regard to the source and why we would choose to use a different bonding mechanism for the SOB over here or whatever, than we would for a general obligation. But I don't see any distinction. And also, I'm concerned about when we started using these, and was it envisioned in the Constitution, or was there any distinction in the Constitution made for revenue bonds that don't carry the full faith and credit of the state? I see that's, to me, the only distinction is that they don't carry the full faith and credit of the state, that bondholders cannot force the state to increase taxes to pay those bonds, whereas they would be able to with general obligation bonds. And to me, that's the only distinction. I'm not sure it's enough of a distinction to cause me to want to deny the voters of the state an opportunity to make an expression about their level of taxation and their level of services.
May I respond, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
The Constitution clearly differentiates between general obligation and revenue bonds, and provides the authority for the issuance of both. The authority exists in the state at this time to enter into lease purchase financing, and it can do it in any way it wants to, in a totally uncontrolled situation. So we're not, in effect, creating anything more than a structured method of entering into these financings. Therefore, we're not either creating or depriving rights already, either not or vested in the people. All this is, as I said before, is remedial, structural legislation in order to give control over a situation that presently is uncontrolled.
I guess I'm having the same problem that Representative Frank's having, is that I understand a revenue bond and a GO bond, but I have a distinction without a difference when the revenue is the unrestricted revenue of the state, because both of them go, one goes to pay GO bonds, one goes to pay these bonds with ASHA, right? I mean, the pot's the same. You know, there's a difference with a revenue bond with the toll authority or a port authority where the revenue's coming from another source.
Let me just pose a postulate.
Maybe we're having some real functional problems here, but I really have a hard time doing that. And I understand what the bill does, I think. I have a question in the bill when we get beyond the philosophy here.
Okay.
But
let me just give you an example. It's an extreme example. Assume for the sake of argument that you could generate enough interest in the Kinnick Arm crossing to get the construction financing through private means. And one of the ways that you are able to do it is to guarantee that the state would pay the debt service in order to give general public access without regard to ability to pay to cross that financing, or cross the crossing. Okay? Source of the capital would be private.
The bill.
Source of repayment would be public. And yet it would be a very useful public facility if, in fact, there were enough traffic to justify it.
And if there wasn't enough traffic to justify it, the state would pay the difference.
No, assume for the sake of argument that the state undertook to say, we will simply pay it, so you won't have to charge a toll, and thereby create some degree of non-use. We'll simply go ahead and pay it because it's such a whiz-bang idea. But the source of the financing was private.
The
revenue is derived from the unrestricted revenue of the state.
I didn't understand.
Well, the source of repayment isn't a problem. With the exception of the restricted revenue in the state, the source of payment for all state programs is the unrestricted revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is in the interest of the state to build facilities in which to house those agencies delivering services to the public, and the financing is less burdensome to the state than either a lease, GO, or direct funding, logical thing to do is to go to lease revenue financing. And this has been structured because of our tax laws so that you need to have a landlord and a tenant.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're doing is specifying a single landlord to handle it.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How could it be less burdensome than GO? How could the scenario you outlined be less burdensome?
The impact on the state's credit is less than GO. It's GO is generally reserved for those fundamental public facilities which would not generate revenue in any event. And because the source of repayment for GO debt would ultimately be the general taxing authority of the state, you're less likely to have flexibility with respect to the construction of needed facilities for the state over time. As a consequence, that constitutes a burden on the state.
Apparently, we have an extreme scheduling difficulty here. We thought we had the room until 5 o'clock, and it's been scheduled at 4:30 for some mental health lands discussions, and there's a hallway full of people, so apologize to the committee, and I know you didn't want to leave early. But I want to keep working on this, and we'll just adjourn here.
We're at your disposal, for a day. Mr. Chairman.
We're going to take up the other two bills tomorrow that are on the calendar. One's on the veterans bonds, Representative Cotton, and the biomass bill. And we're going to just hold 519 and 520. And commissioners, I mentioned to you earlier, part of the plan here, Representative Adams has appointed Representative Frank as to head up a subcommittee on these two bills plus the other two in the package, I think, when they get to finance. And we're just going to hold this bill here, and when the other ones get to finance, we're going to get them out.
We have another committee referral between here and finance.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, it's judiciary.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll work on that. That's
okay.
We'll work on that issue.
My opinion on that, Steve, is that
okay, thank you. Committee stand adjourned until tomorrow.